Coming up next segment, Jeffrey Chidiha from the NFL Network joins us. But as promised, we are joined by a Pac-12 football analyst. He is a filmmaker. He is a New York Times best-selling author. He is the host of the Life Without Limits podcast. And he holds the honor of being the first in-studio guest on CBS Sports Network of this program. And now the first three-time in-studio guest on CBS Sports Network. Yogi Roth is my guest. Yogi, it's Monday. College football starts on Saturday. So, you know, I've got two questions for you. How are you doing and how great is ball?
I love that distinction. I'm going to keep hanging with that. I'm going to be the first four time. If there's ever competition, I want to get a call. I want to make sure that we just grow the lead as much as possible.
No one's going to run you down, man. It's a boat race. So how are you doing and how great is ball right about now?
Bro, it is so good. No, of course, thanks for having me. I love coming down here for this. And I think when you've been around the game, like we have this time of year, whether it's because of the academic year, like we're programmed to get a new backpack, like a trapper keeper, a new pair of kicks. Like we're also programmed to like work out harder because the smell of the grass is there. Games are approaching, the buildup of training camp. I mean, that's what we love, whether it's your company and your radio show. You're building something, right? And I think that's when I drop around all these college campuses, whether it's Mike Bloomgren at Rice, who's kicking it off this weekend, or David Shaw at Stanford, or Chris Peterson, Clay Helton, Chip Kelly. I mean, they're building something. And to me, what a joy it is to be there, celebrate the game, learn stories of 105 guys on each team, and then call it on Saturday on the Pac-12 networks. Man, I'm jacked. I wish we had a game Saturday. It's a little bit, you know, unfortunately about 10, 12 days away for me on a Thursday night in Salt Lake, but I'm ready to roll.
All right, so you mentioned some guys I want to get to in a minute. You know, I want to talk about the Pac-12, but really quickly, last time you and I spoke, you were getting ready to go to San Sebastian to do some surfing. You're always a guy looking to get something, to grow, to take an experience, enhance that experience. What about this particular trip? What was it like, and how did this one impact you?
Yeah, this one was a life changer for sure. You know, I'm a guy who I like to go fast and go hard as a traveler. I'm like the Chip Kelly of travelers. Like I got to move. I got to bounce from place to place. And on every trip, I always leave my shoes. And I leave them because my dad left his wrestling shoes in the center of a ring. And he told me this story of when you leave them in the center of the ring, when your career is over, you signify you left your heart and your soul on the trip. So I have done that for the last 15, 16 years traveling around the globe. And I was challenged by a mentor of mine, a guy named Ken Black, and he said he's an executive at Nike for 25 years in innovation. And he said, yo, what if instead of leaving your shoes in a place, you just wore your shoes in the same place and you were literally where your feet are? And one of my favorite phrases is be where your feet are. So I did not bounce. I went to San Sebastian, Spain, got an apartment overlooking the beach, hung with my girlfriend and her family, surfed every single day for about a month, wrote a draft to a book, was just committed to that and slowly prepping for the season. And for a guy who always wants to move around, it was so great just to be connected to one place and just settle in there. And I think as you get older, like you start to appreciate just like the quiet, you know, the space between the space, the space between the notes. If you're playing the piano and instead of a bunch of different chords, it was one and then just hear it and sit in it and then hit the next one. And that's what that trip was for me. So I feel like a different guy. You know, it's my 10th year of broadcasting. I feel more matured and I owe it all to the beaches of San Sebastian.
Yogi Roth joined me in studio. You know, I'm trying to talk football with you, but you're such a process guy. So if you go with your girlfriend and her family and you're in San Sebastian, but you're working, you're prepping. I mean, is that a vacation or something different? Exactly. What is that?
Yeah. Well, for me, I did 2 weeks by myself and then 2 weeks with them. And when they were there, I didn't open my computer once. Mm. And it was like the greatest thing to do and just to totally disconnect. So I went in and went hard. And you know, in our profession, like you have so much happening. But when you're in Spain or in Europe, you're 8-9 hours ahead. So I was able to literally just settle in, write, surf, eat, write, surf, eat. And the sun doesn't go down till 10 o'clock. So I'm paddling out till 9:30 every single night. And then going to have pinchos and hang out and have a craft of wine and just enjoy life. So I was able to do it, man. And for me, I want to create a life where I can go overseas. And now with football being in 72 countries, American football, there's clearly opportunity to go do that and see what we can do with the greatest game, I believe, on the planet.
We're talking to Yogi Roth. He's in studio. All right, so shifting over to the Pac-12 and the season on the field. When you consider how things went for that conference in the bowl season last year, how much pressure is there on elite teams in the conference to make some statements?
It's big. You know, the narrative of this conference is always set by the East Coast. Fortunately, unfortunately, I think it's just a reality. And the Pac-12, rightfully so, gets lit up for a 1-8 bowl season. But nobody talks about the last 5 years, second best bowl record, or 3 years ago had an elite bowl record. I mean, clearly, no one's making those arguments for any conference. It's kind of like doomsday. It's let's just tear down. And I think that's an area of athletics or news we kind of go to the negative.
Clicks, so, man. Clicks.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's important. And I think week one is important. I did a study on week one over the last 5 years. And you can go back to Stanford Northwestern. They lose a 9:30 a.m. game. Look at SC Bama. They get smoked in that game. And now we got Auburn UW. It sets the narrative for the whole conference. After the first 3 weeks, the Pac-12 has had the first or second best record in the last 5 years in non-conference games. But nobody cares. It's just about that opening weekend, the anticipation for college football season. What do the big dogs do? So for UW, rightfully so, and they probably don't like it, but they're carrying the reputation of this conference in a basic road game in Atlanta, week one. All eyes will be on Auburn versus UW, and that's just where we are right now. I don't think that the rest of the country pays attention to nine conference games and then six straight in a row conference games when – you know, and it's never been an easy road for any team in the Pac-12. I say that because you look at teams that have had a tough road game and then they get a Friday night game. Sometimes on the road, that's happened in this conference. You look at the SEC and the way they set it up, it's brilliantly gross. You know, it's brilliant because their teams have the easiest path to get there. It's gross because week 11, they give somebody $1, $2 million and play a joke of an opponent. To me, as a purist in sport, I've never been around a sport where a team who loses their last game gets to go compete for the title. It happened a year ago for Bama. So what are we doing with the voting? What are we doing with the polling? What are we doing with facts on the field, facts in the regular season, and then where we're sending teams to find the best team that year versus the best roster that year? Those are discussions that I hope the CFP is going to have as the season goes on.
Yogi Roth, my guest. You know, I hate to be that guy that you just talked about, but, you know, there's so many positive things about the game. There's so many great things about the game. But if you juxtapose some of that against the alleged toxic environment at Maryland, and then also what's going on at Ohio State, overall, what do you think and how does that make you feel?
It makes me sick, man, you know, to be honest. I mean, if you look back on the game, and I think, you know, I have a major issue with two elements in athletics. One, and I'm a part of it, is when you're a kid in athletics, if you can shoot a jumper, if you can make a play, you're usually given a second chance a lot of the times. Hey, I got to turn my quiz in a little late because I had a game this weekend. Okay, you get a pass in fifth grade for the first time. And that pattern never really ends.
Dude, it starts so early, too. You're pushed right through the system.
You're pushed right through the system. So why wouldn't you at Ohio State think that you're going to get an extra chance if you're that coach? Or why wouldn't you, if you're a student athlete, think you're going to get another opportunity? Why wouldn't you think that, hey, maybe you did something inappropriate on a Saturday night and, oh, I'm going to get passed through? I mean, 1 in 4 women are sexually assaulted on college campuses every week. That's why I'm a part of the organization Protect Her and Set the Expectation with Alexis Jones and Brenda Tracy. So I'm sick about that. That makes me sick. And the other side of this is I think college football is the smallest profession with the biggest egos. And when you think that you are smarter than the game, I think the game slaps you down. And we've seen it happen in the past with coaches, with athletes. We're going to continue to see it happen. And I think it's tough when coaches get their job because they want to stamp everything they ever believe in into a program day one. And some of it's a different mentality than what will work today or what should work today. And I think, unfortunately, we saw some of that at Maryland. So I never want to see a guy lose his job because I think of the 20 other staffers and their families and the 140 people affected. But if you've curated and cultivated an environment like is reported at Maryland, you're gone. If you willingly said this is someone who's been around and involved in the domestic violence at Ohio State and allowed him to recruit student athletes and walk into the homes of family and say, hey, I'm going to treat you like my son, you're gone if those things did occur. And that, to me, is just the standard of coaching, whether it's Pop Warner, high school, elite, big money, college football, or the NFL. What are coaches here to do? We're here to set a trend and give lessons to the next generation of leaders, the current generation of learners. And if we don't do that, I don't think winning games or winning championships is good enough. It is for a while, but eventually you get got. And we're seeing that potentially happen now around the country.
Eventually you get got. Listen, I don't know exactly what was going on in Maryland. We've seen the reports. Nobody's saying that you don't have to or you're not or you're wrong to develop toughness in a team. We understand this. It's a tough physical game. But do you need to do that through fear or is there another way to do it?
Well, I think there's a bunch of different leadership philosophies, fear being one of them. I mean, you talk to some of the greatest athletes ever. I interviewed Jerry Rice. I'll never forget it last summer at the opening with the Elite 11. And he was driven by the fear of failure. So fear is a big element of some coaching philosophies and how you motivate players. I get that. But it's having boundaries. It's having spatial awareness. It's understanding that it goes top down. And one of my favorite things to do on college campuses, I'll go listen to the 10th coach in his meeting or on the practice field. How is he coaching? So that's like the tight end coach. Maybe it's a special teams coach. It's the 10th guy. And I say that because they're in a meeting at a big table and the head coach is at the front of it. And he's saying the expectation. He's saying, we need more out of gym. We need less out of yoga. We got to get this guy tougher. We got to get this guy stronger. Or we got to MF this dude. Whatever they're saying, he's a this, he's a that. They're taking that message and then they're cranking it up because they want you as the leader, the head coach, to be affirmed. And a lot of young coaches don't know how to do that necessarily. The vernacular, the craft is still developing as they go on. So to me, the greatest ones, the David Shaws, the Chris Peterson, I was on the staff with Pete Carroll. The greatest ones are very aware of how powerful their words are and the standard they set is and what they say is kosher and what is way out of bounds. And sometimes the young guys don't know and they get stressed. It's why I love seeing coaches get a second opportunity. Not if it's inappropriate things they did to get let go from their first job, but their second job, they usually do better because they've learned so much from that first one. But I do think the tone is always set from the top, whether that's the mentality, the language used, the philosophy, the way you coach. I mean, Chris Peterson is a great example. He'll sit in on meetings with his assistants, with his yellow notepad. It's great when they talk about it. And he evaluates everything they say, so much so that they have to spend for a 30-minute meeting roughly 2 hours to prepare for that. Everyone is like a TED Talk. So if you go and talk to one of those assistants, the preparation, the attention to detail, the language they're using, right? The do versus be. You know, what do I want to do? What do I need to who do I want to be? What do I need to do? You know, that conversation. That's always happening in those offices and that facility up in Seattle. And that, to me, is what the great leaders do when they're trying to create a philosophy, whether it's fear-based or mentorship-based or whatever it is that they choose to
go
with.
You know, well, Scott Frost, when he came on the show recently, he said, look, we're not going to use profanity. And he said, quote, we're not going to MF our players here either. There's a way to reach these guys and get that message across without doing that. Yogi, before you go, one last thought. You mentioned Brenda Tracy. You've talked about the set the expectation philosophy. For those who don't know, what is that? And who is Brenda Tracy?
It's amazing, man. You're going to see it in the Elite 11 documentary. We partnered with the NFL Network that's going to be coming out. She spoke to all 166 athletes at the opening, which is football heaven, the top high school players in the country. And for Brenda, she was gang raped by college football student athletes at Oregon State University 20-plus years ago and never really shared her story until a few years ago. And when she shared it, you can imagine the amount of support, but also there's an element of backlash. And she's made it her mission to go around the country and tell her story. And you look at what she's doing, and Alexis Jones, who's also an advocate for ending sexual and relationship violence on college campuses, they're changing the narrative so much so that David Shaw and Stanford last year dedicated a game to the concept of set the expectation of the student athletes. Bryce Love, you can be the expectations. Student athletes can be the cure to ending sexual violence instead of the problem. Like I referenced earlier, 1 in 4 women are sexually assaulted on college campus on average. That's just reported. It jumps to 40% of sexual assault incidents occur on the home campus when you have a night football game. I mean, think of the numbers for a second. So we talked to the athletes about, hey, man, just the simple phrase of, hey, bro, we don't do that. When you hear the talk in the locker room, when you see something happening, you know, at a party, if you're 18, gaining the courage to go do that. And Brenda and Alexis have spoken all over the country. Brenda was just at Cal. She's been to Stanford, obviously, as I referenced. She's been to pretty much everywhere. She was just in Michigan. She's been all over. And it's our duty as people in the environment of the media to celebrate that story and share it so these athletes do begin to change. Because a lot of times what I found is that they're not even aware of what they're saying. Right. And I was with an athlete, a top running back in the country at the opening, and he's in a room with all the best running backs. And it's kind of like, ask the college guys whatever you want. And his first question was, what those whatever like at your institution? Mm. And I stopped him afterwards and I was like, dude, you just listened to Brenda yesterday. Like, you just signed this pledge that said you were going to be the expectation. And he wasn't even aware of the way he talked, the community he was around. And now we text every week about how he's doing the work to change just the way that he perceives and projects his view towards women. So I think it's our job to continue to educate and follow the lead of Brenda and Alexis, man. They're phenomenal.
No doubt. Yogi Roth in studio, Pac-12 football analyst. He is a filmmaker. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He's got a podcast, the Life Without Limits podcast, and that makes three for you, my brother. Three times in studio. It's going to be a boat race. No one's going to run you down. Yogi, really appreciate you. Great to see you. I know it's a great time of year, and it's great talking ball with you as always.
Bro, it's a pleasure.